Hello and welcome to AIPT Comics Podcast, the number one comic book podcast on AIPTcomics.com. My name is David Brooke. I am your host. I am the hostess with the mostest. Not quite though, because there's one more host and his name is...
Hello, my name is Forrest with two R's. I just got in from forest fire season and a pandemic and boy are my arms tired.
What do you use your arms for in both of those terrible situations?
Highly classified. Shoot.
I feel like we need the X-Files music to start playing.
I'm trying to have a more chaotic, esoteric energy. I might chanting. I'm going to record another track that's just me chanting on the bottom of this.
Or like talking backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just overlay it on the track.
But I'm just saying stuff like Batman, Commissioner Gordon, Nightwing.
But then your super fans will listen and be like, oh, there are clues here for the next episode.
He was Dick Grayson, but then he got hit in the head and he was Rick Grayson. Grick Mason.
Oh my gosh. Paul is dead.
Yeah. Also just throw in some that are not related at all.
Yeah, just, you know, mix it up. We are on episode 89. This is the comic book podcast where we do interviews, recap the biggest news of the week, review comics, and look ahead to comics out next week. It's to keep you up to date and connected to the industry. And it's a lot of fun, I think, to just think about comics every week in this kind of way.
It's fun to talk shit about them.
We do have many opinions, and those opinions come out quite strongly in our news section, which we start every show with. In the top of the news, DC Fandom Explore the Multiverse took place on Saturday. This is the second virtual convention from DC, and the first one was a couple weeks ago where they mostly talked about movies. This week, they have many more comic book panels. Forrest and I didn't have the chance to dig into them quite yet, but they're all streaming, similar to how you would watch a YouTube clip where you can scrub through the videos and watch them later. And some of the biggest panels are actually focused on stories that are going on right now, so there may not be that many scoops if you're looking for spoilers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Joker War, Three Jokers, Dark Knight, Death Metal are all being covered with most of the creators involved too.
Yep, and then a lot of TV news. They pretty much extracted all of the TV news from the previous Fandom weekend and moved it to this.
Yeah.
So they did things like announce the fourth season of DC's Young Justice and the third season of Doom Patrol, bodes well for their HBO deal.
Yeah. Have they actually confirmed yet if DC Universe is dying or going away? They haven't, right?
DC Universe is going to be a comics-only platform that I swear they said something like, yeah, through the end of 2021, but they didn't commit past that or something.
Gotcha.
They have moved all of the video to HBO Max.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're a comic book lover, they're actually giving away three comics for 24 hours only. The entire Teen Titans Raven graphic novel, which came out a year or two ago now, and the entire Dear Justice League, which came out last year as well. Those are all ages, or not all ages. One is middle grade readers, and Dear Justice League is definitely all ages. They're also giving away the Milestone Returns number 0 comic, and that one's available forever, I think. It's not just 24 hours. There's also some master classes that went up on Saturday featuring some big-time creators like Cecil Castellucci or Klaus Johnson, Grant Morrison, talking about comics creation and the like.
And
so,
de-creation.
And de-creation. It's cool that they're giving comics more of a focus, although it doesn't feel as big or they didn't put as much backing into it like they did when in their first virtual convention with the Batman and stuff like that being featured.
Right. Yeah. And this is all, you know, probably born out of them having to pivot and restructure quite a bit after the layoffs.
Right.
They're probably very much in an unstable, kind of volatile state right now, and they haven't aligned on the things that they're doing for the rest of this year, let alone next year.
Right. Mm-hmm. One panel features the creators behind Beast Boy, Teen Titans Beast Boy, the sequel series by Cammy Garcia and Gabriel Piccolo. I wanted to bring this up because there's a panel with them talking about it. But earlier this week, they also revealed they're doing a tour around the country. There's 8 or so venues are going to sign books, and there's some freebies you can get if you go show up at these bookstores. But I couldn't believe they were doing this with a pandemic going on.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad that we share the same thought, because I saw this, I read this news, I read it twice to make sure I read it correctly.
Yeah.
And then I thought to myself, I don't think a Beast Boy book tour is essential business.
Right. And I mean, they're going to like Miami, Florida. Yeah. Which is not...
yeah. It's a bad idea. It's a bad look.
I wrote the news, but I wrote it without any angle. I just said, this is what's happening. But here in the on the podcast is where we really tell people how we feel. And yeah, this is not worth it.
No, absolutely not. Don't go to this.
Especially since you can watch them virtually, pretty much probably say the same things they'll say at the event.
Yeah.
Next up in the news, though, we have a lot of DC news, by the way, and a lot of Marvel news this week. DC Comics revealed Represent, a new digital-only series, adding to their digital-only first. They call it digital-only first, I suppose, because they'll probably collect it eventually. But this week they revealed, and DC's really good about this, revealing something and then also offering it, almost like Apple does. The same day they announced Represent, it was also available for free on Comixology. This series is written by Christopher Cooper, Aletha Martinez, with art by Mark Morales, Emilio Lopez, and Rob Clark Jr. It's an interesting new series because it's basically giving traditionally unrepresented people and stories a mainstream comic book medium to kind of tell these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this issue in particular is called It's a Bird. It's chapter one. It's written by Christian Cooper, who was a Marvel editor, the first openly gay Marvel editor. And then also had the kind of famous experience with the woman that was going to call the police on him.
Right.
In Central Park.
Was that like April?
A couple months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a week ago, it feels like a month ago at this point.
Yeah. So I think that they are not running the whole series, are they? It's one shots, kind of similar to the Harley Quinn Black, White, and Red. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is an interesting series. It kind of reminds me of the Marvel Voices series in that, you know, it's trying to give, you know, lesser heard voices and creators that might not necessarily have the opportunity to tell these kind of stories. And since it's digital first, it's like a low risk thing for DC to try out.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do and I respect it and I appreciate it, but I also worry about these lesser represented marginalized people being slotted into this.
Oh, you're right. And
being
that's
like, oh, well, they got Represent or they got Voices, when really, you know, they should be writing the mainstream stories as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially because I'm going to talk about Rise of Ultraman later, which I liked quite a bit, and that's on Marvel's side, but there's a bunch of white men writing this famous Japanese property through Marvel, and I don't feel great about it, I guess. And I do hope that these voices aren't limited only to Represent and to Marvel Voices, but that they get big property opportunities as well.
Yeah, like it's opening the door.
Right.
Potentially. You're so right, though. Could you imagine like a shitty editor is just like, ah, they're black, give them that,
right? And that's what I'm concerned about, is like the idea that it's like, oh, well, you got that,
right. It's the same sort of with Marvel's Voices, in that, you know, it's a one shot thing that could be the end of the road for some people.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
I don't trust the Big Two's editorial decisions.
Oh, yeah. They just fired a bunch often. Of their editors, too.
Yeah.
Who's editing over there anymore? Who knows?
True.
One road that isn't ending is DC Generations, which we all thought was going to end when Dan Didio was fired from DC Comics. There's a DC Generations event reimagined with the homecoming of the original 1939 Batman. It's clear that this is a $10, 80-page one-shot that is probably being repackaged as an Elseworlds tale that may have work in it that was part of the 5G reboot. Am I wrong, do you think?
That's probably true.
Yeah. So yeah, Newsarama reported on this news this week. And basically, a lot of the news, including this week, is because DC solicits and Marvel solicits are going to come out very soon, maybe next week or the week after. So DC and Marvel are trickling out little bits of news for comics coming out in December, as this is coming out in December. That also includes Batman Black and White, which is returning in December. This was a pretty famous run of the series years and years ago, and it's coming back to sort of highlight the artists involved. It's coming December 8th. It's a 48-page prestige format limited series. Wow. It features some crazy...
Does it say wow there, or did you add that?
Oh, I added that. Oh.
You did it in that voice that made me think it said prestige format. Wow.
That's what it should be called. Creators behind this, insanely good. Bilquis Evely, J.H. Williams III, Tim Seeley, Kelly Jones, Andy Kubert, Mitch Gerads, and Tom King are teaming up once again. Riley Rosmo, James Tinian, Lee Weeks, I could go on. Chip Zdarsky is
on there, yeah.
I love his mask tweets on Twitter, where he's got that anime character mask below his face mask. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Chup is very good.
He is very good. DC also revealed dark multiverse stories are coming. More dark multiverse stories coming. Mm-hmm. There are three more. One is War of the Gods by Vidya Ayala and Ariel Olivetti. An amazing team up right there. I think that'll be pretty cool. There's another focus on Crisis on Infinity Earths by Steve Orlando and Mike Perkins. Another awesome collab. And then there's one focused on an alternate universe of Metal. It's almost like a super meta series, because it's already an Elseworlds series, the Tales from the Dark Multiverse, but it's a new take on Metal. What is that? The event from 2 years ago now? Or is it a year ago?
Yeah. I saw this cover and I thought, isn't that just Metal?
Right.
But maybe not.
Maybe not.
There's that a one's... Leviathan Joker snake worm.
Which we actually saw recently again in a one of these Dark Knights death metal books. So, I don't know.
I am looking forward to the Crisis on Infinite Earths issue.
Yeah, that's a big event.
Which will probably be one of Steve Orlando's last things over at DC.
Yeah, we keep saying that, and then he keeps coming out with something.
He had a lot of work banked, I guess.
Yeah. I'm all for Elseworlds Tales, so sure, I'm curious absolutely. About all of these. I'm not super into DC events, like, historically, so I don't know if I'll be totally on board, but we'll see.
Well, I think that the issue that they're running into in some ways, and why some of them feel unsatisfying, is that they're limiting an issue to retell an entire event.
That is a good point.
And so it's like, okay, yeah, you're going to rush through the beginning, the middle, and the end. You're going to rush through that three-act structure in one issue, mm-hmm. as compared to, you know, 10 or 15.
Yeah, it took place over like 9 months in real time when it originally came out. And now we're going to just decompress it.
Which also does kind of, compress it. Which kind of devalues those stories too, to be like, actually, all this could have been told in one issue.
That's an interesting take, yeah. Do you have an interesting take on the finally revealed Batman Catwoman number one coming December 1st?
Good for them.
This 12-issue miniseries was hyped, I can't even remember how long ago, quite a long time ago. They revealed Tom King and Clay Mann and Tomeo Mori and Clayton Cowles will be teaming up to do this extension of Tom King's run of Batman, or Bat-Cat, as the characters are so fondly to say. But it also involves the Phantasm, the Mask of the Phantasm character, which is probably a total nostalgic play. For those who grew up with this character?
It is, absolutely. And I'm not convinced that I'm going to like how Tom King writes her. It really depends. But I do think she hasn't been in comics.
No. Yeah, not in the continuity of things. Yeah,
so that's interesting.
It is, yeah. It's opening a Pandora's box on a nostalgic idea, though. It's a little dangerous in my mind.
Yeah.
There's some art on APT Comics like on the checkout that they revealed... Clay Mann is Clay Manning Catwoman for sure. But yeah, it looks good. Looks like it's an interesting story. It's probably going to take a bazillion years to come out. Hopefully they can get a bunch of those issues, so it's not like Doomsday Clock and it takes 2 years to get 12 issues. Also in the news, Newsarama revealed, and we kind of already knew this, Brian Michael Bendis is ending his Superman and Action Comics run in December. Originally revealed by David Harper, right? On his podcast?
Yes, Sketched.
Yeah, so this is now official because off the panel. Solicitations... Off-panel, yes. Since the solicitations don't have it in there, they have to tell us all that, yep, he's done. So where's he going, Forrest? What do you think he's going to write next?
Justice Society of America.
Okay. I wonder what he wants
Justice
to write next.
Justice League.
You probably want to write Batman, but...
I mean, he's not off Legion, is he?
I don't know. I don't know if it's canceled or not.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Young Justice.
You know, Bendis is a longtime writer in comics. One might say legendary. One might not say that. But also legendary in a way is Ron Mars, who is coming back to DC Comics to do this Justice League Endless Winter event that's coming in December. This week, DC Comics revealed a bunch of cover art for the series, as well as what it'll be about.
Yes. I got it right here. 1,000 years ago, a disparate group of heroes, Hippolyta, Black Adam, Swamp Thing, and the Viking Prince,
banded
together to prevent the world from freezing at the hands of the Frost King, an exiled Norse god with the ability to control entire ecosystems. The heroes triumphed, but victory came at a terrible price. One that has been kept secret until now.
Bum, bum, bum.
This is totally a story about climate change. When you have a villain that controls entire ecosystems, I don't know what else it could possibly be about. It makes me a little bit nervous because this isn't exactly their creative A-team for events.
Mm-hmm.
This is an event happening at the same time as other events featuring the same characters.
Right.
So I'm a little nervous about it. And I'm also, I guess, I fantasy booked it being the full integration of Sandman into the DC continuity.
Oh, that's right.
It's obviously happening at some point. And a lot of people speculated before they started to release more images from it that that's what it was. I don't fault them for it not being that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of like, when's that going to happen? Because this, I don't know where this event's coming from.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's Ron Mars and Andy Lanning who aren't like doing much. I don't think they're doing anything at DC right now. So where is this sprouting from?
Like editorially and narratively.
Yeah, it's almost like someone approved their pitch and they were like, "Let's just do that."
Yeah, I mean, I just have event fatigue, is what I'm saying. It has nothing to do with the creators, or the editors, or anything.
This is going to go up against King in Black over at Marvel Comics.
Woo!
They're both going to be very dark, I'm sure. One point I want to make, Andy Lanning, you know, he's famous for working with Dan Abnett on Guardians of the Galaxy and making basically the Guardians what we know today movies.
Yes.
So he definitely has the skills to pay the bills, if you so to speak. it's also nice to see DC has put a cap on it, that it will be, what is it? How many issues? 9 issues.
Nine.
It's a 9-issue event. So, you know, with DC Death Metal, they also kept that too. And then they've just been unveiling one shot after one shot, which I reviewed one a week or two ago, and it was billed as a one shot, but it totally is the next chapter. So I think they're just like sneaking in more issues you got to read in between. Maybe this is more of the same. Hopefully not, though, because as you said, with events, they never end.
Yeah, I mean, we're pivoting into talking about another event right now. As you mentioned, King in Black tie-in information was released on Friday. They've started releasing King in Black variant covers, also mainstream cover art, and the relaunch of Black Cat to be integrated with King in Black.
Right.
The launch of an Iron Man Doctor Doom one-shot where they're fighting Santa Claus?
So yeah, last week Christopher Cantwell was on the show and we kind of teased out a spoiler, which was Doctor Doom will show up, but he didn't mention Santa Claus in that spoiler. So that's fully revealed now. Yeah, Doctor Doom and Iron Man are going to fight Santa Claus.
And then you've also got Al Ewing writing an Immortal Hulk one-shot for King in Black.
Right.
That looks fantastic. But I was also going to say that the solicit text kind of makes it seem like it's Christmassy.
Interesting.
Is King in Black a Christmas event?
Whoa. That blows my mind.
Nola's Krampus.
You know, he kind of has like a evil, I mean, he's got this like, I don't know.
Evil elf energy, yeah.
Elf, that's it. That was what I wanted to say. Yes, you're so right. My God, could you imagine?
The reveal that Nola's Krampus?
Or he somehow is involved with like the real life Santa Claus in our history.
Yeah.
I don't know. That is some stupid fun. So it is stupid fun.
You know, part of it is like I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I'm nervous that they're spreading the Venom storyline, which I have generally liked, very thin, very quickly.
Right.
Some people would say that they've already reached that tipping point, which I think is totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Venom needs to pivot after this into something narrow, quieter, smaller, more intimate.
Right.
Because this, on the heels of Absolute Carnage, and we were just talking about Event Fatigue, is kind of like, okay, I get it.
Right, and if you're reading Venom right now, the main series, Donny Cates is clearly just taking little baby steps to make him into a god who could do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you just said is the exact opposite of the direction it seems to be going in. So maybe King in Black will like snip his wings a little bit and make him fall back to Earth.
I hope that that's the case.
Only time will tell.
I want a story about Eddie reconciling his relationship with Dylan, not fighting an evil space god that was made up a year ago.
You don't want Dylan to become a god?
Dylan was made up too, but you know what I mean.
Could you imagine if, like, I think that, well, I've said this on the show, but I think Dylan would become a god. It'll create a weird dynamic between him and Eddie, and then they'll whisk Dylan away so that Venom can be the solo non-dad character for a while.
You're probably right.
Which is always happens in comics where, like, they introduce a kid or, like, whatever, a new relationship, and then they're like, let's go back to basics.
Yeah.
Also, solicited is Champions coming out from E-Viewing and Simone Di Nicolo?
DeMeo.
DeMeo, sorry. I was doing that from memory. He is also working with Al Ewing over at Boom. So, big name there. Champions was supposed to come out, I think, in April. So, it's yet another example of Marvel re-soliciting, re-scheduling a book that was
kind of
delayed.
Relaunching it, even. Because originally it was going to be a line-wide Outlawed event.
Right.
And they're still doing Outlawed, but it's limited only to Champions.
Right.
Maybe with passing references in other stories. I'm not certain.
Yeah, this week Ms. Marvel kind of references it.
Ms. Marvel, and then also I think the Miles Morales book did.
Right, yes it is, yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess means Saladin Ahmed was in on the idea.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward though, right? Because like, they've had to put it on hold. Now they're kind of bringing it out at different times.
Dave, you there?
You're back. Hello? Yeah, you went silent for a second there. Could you hear me?
Yeah, you cut out.
Hello?
You cut out.
Oh, you cut out.
You cut out.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how coherent this Outlawed thing is, because being so delayed so much, it's kind of awkwardly kind of added in now in December.
Yeah.
Also revealed, Children of the Atom has finally got a sale date for January 2021. That's a much anticipated comic for X-Fans.
Yes, it is. I think for a while it was trending to just ask Jordan White when it was coming out on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which, like,
do you remember?
To be clear, don't do that.
Mm.
Don't do that during a pandemic. But also, it's very funny, and I also really wanted to read Children of the Atom, so...
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, he went on Twitter. He, like, randomly started recording answers and putting them on Twitter, and one of them was, it's coming. But he didn't say when then, so...
Yeah.
This is new news, I suppose. I saw some people, quote, tweeting the AIPT news and saying, you're lying. You got it wrong. Very mad that it's still quite a ways off, but at least we now have a set date. Also this week in the news, Empire State of the Mind, the seventh column from AIPT, had its final column, and I just wanted to call it out because there's some tidbits in this where it actually featured Al Ewing and Valerio Schiti answering fan questions, and he talks a little bit about the cliffhangers that are in Empire Aftermath, as well as where we're going from here a little bit. The fact that we're going to definitely see more Hulkling and Wiccan. I feel like Al Ewing kind of confirms that we'll get more Young Avengers stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say it outright, but he definitely leads you to believe that.
Yeah.
It's a really good column. There's some really good answers in here, both from Schiti and Ewing. not only about the series, but also, like, process.
Yeah, and I really got the impression from reading it that Ewing, Empire was a vehicle to get the characters where he wanted to be to tell the stories he wants to tell. And I don't mean to say that to devalue Empire, because it was actually pretty good by Marvel event standards, but it really seems like he's more interested in what's after Empire.
Right, right. I am very curious to see if, I know we'll never know, but like the relationship Slott and Ewing had, because you can sort of, as you're reading the series, you can sort of see where Ewing sort of back over.
Yes, yes. That's a nice way to say that.
It makes me wonder, like, was Slott set to do it himself, got through, like, you know, he obviously plotted a lot of it, if not all of it, I'm not sure, and wrote some of it, but then he sort of scaled back, because if you look at the credits page, his name slowly slides down to, like, co-writer to, like, story writer, and no longer the script writer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're totally right. I think Empire was a pretty good event by Marvel standards. Definitely better than War of the Realms, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely.
There's some really important stuff that happens in there that changes the course of history. I don't think War of the Realms really did much as far as changing. Oh, I guess they created Valkyrie out of it. Jane Foster was Valkyrie after that. As you can tell, if you read comics, Marvel comics these days, she's not necessarily the biggest character. Also, speaking of AIPT columns, there was a teaser posted on Saturday morning where there were a bunch of names. Jordan D. White, Annalise Bisa, Jerry Dugan, Benjamin Percy, Leah Williams, Vita Ayala, Seb Wells, Mark Basso, Al Ewing, Tina Howard, and Jonathan Hickman. And at the bottom, it said 9/14/20 at X. I'm going to assume that's 10 a.m. Eastern, AIPT X-Men Monday number 75. Looks like Chris Hassan may have quite a few people involved in X-Men Monday come Monday, tomorrow morning. Check out AIPTcomics.com, where X-Men Monday will feature, I'm assuming, based on this teaser, all of these people, including Jonathan Hickman. That's huge. There is other big news to talk about. IDW adds DC veteran Kobashigawa and promotes Hughes and Stoddard. So there's been a lot of movement from IDW in the last 2 or 3 weeks now. Not only retiring folks who were promoted, but adding new voices to their lineup of not only publisher, president, and VP. This is more good news, I think, because they're getting people in place that can actually help propel creative storytelling across the board instead of just being an IP farm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I'm very excited about this. And you know, I feel like IDW news is very close to the AIPT Comics podcast identity. Because you remember when we started this over a year ago, like it was like IDW was the big news, like for like months when they were like losing money and stuff.
I mean, we were talking about them losing money, them spending a bunch of money on pilots, their board restructured and said that they were only doing licensed comics. They promoted people, they demoted people, they fired people.
Yeah,
it's been a tumultuous couple years for them.
So yeah, this it feels like they're getting on the right track.
A Marvel license through all of that somehow.
Yeah, doing like younger reader stuff.
Yeah.
So that's good on them. Next up, last bit of news: Little Birds getting a prequel. What? It's called Precious Metal.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's by the creators who did Little Bird.
Darcy Van Poelgeese and Ian Bertram. Ian Bertram is one of my favorite artists, so I will be reading this. This takes place 35 years before the events of Little Bird. It says a child goes missing, and now one man has to keep it that way.
Mm.
Which is a pretty... you get a little bit of a knot in your stomach, right?
Yeah. Because
it subverts the prototypical idea, I guess, as Little Bird did. That's one of the most celebrated comics of the last year, Little Bird is, and I'm very much looking forward to this.
It's won a ton of awards for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it for news. In our next segment, pitch a book for a solo character who doesn't have a book right now. Who is the artist? Who is the author? Who deserves a book? It doesn't have to be just superheroes. It can be Santa Claus if you so desire. Although he has had a solo book, I suppose, over at Boom, huh?
True.
In Claus.
Yes.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I've got two real quick. I don't have plot beats for them, so I'm just going to say the teams and the character.
Sweet.
I want Superior Spider-Man, written by Kieran Gillen, with art by Javier Garon.
Okay.
I think Gillen can write interesting characters or characters that are struggling with the grips of reality. And Superior Spider-Man's a great character for that. He's also good at writing funny evil, like Mr. Sinister. Mm-hmm. So I'm into that. Javier Garon was what I liked the most about Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. The art on Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, as well as All New Wolverine and some of the X-23 that was written by Mariko Tamaki. Which leads me to say, X-23, written by Leah Williams, with art by Daniel Warren Johnson.
Okay.
Those characters and probably those creators should come as no surprise to anyone that has read my reviews or listened to this podcast.
That's interesting. Daniel Warren Johnson typically he writes and draws, right? So
that's not always true. His first work was only art.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be a tight book. So the first one was Kieran Gillen and Javier Garon on Superior Spider-Man, was that right?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Because I do think that Superior Spider-Man deserves an ongoing. That Christos Gage one was a little up and down. It had a bunch of false starts and stops. And it's unfortunate that it got canceled right when it felt like they were getting to the plot.
Yeah.
But I think Kieran would have a fascinating take on Otto.
Oh, for sure. Probably a complex one.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Kieran, you're going to have to drop 40K. You're going to have to drop Eternals to make Forrest happy.
Yeah, and Leah is great at writing female characters, great at writing complex, struggling characters, which Laura Kinney very much is.
Yeah.
Obviously, that would tie into the DOX Krakoa plot in some way, but I'm not totally sure how.
I can't even imagine what Johnson would do with that. Like,
just the idea of like a gritty spec ops Laura.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's really good at like detailed like war scenes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My pick is Jeff Lemire and Christian Ward teaming up to do a Starjammers comic.
Starjammers. Wow. Okay.
Okay. So here's my reasons. One, most importantly, Starjammers has never been that good. It's never been like the book you need to read. I mean,
that's true.
It's had its moments in history, but usually at times when they were, you know, not even up to snuff to the books at the time. So it's just ripe for new storytelling and character building of the team. And I think Lemire could do that in spades. Christian Ward will bring that, you know, psychedelic cosmic look that could redefine it. Because I feel like the Starjammers at this point are just like a sci-fi pirate group rendered in a more realistic, you know, typical 90s style Marvel comic style. And if you brought in that, you know, psychedelic color scheme that we've kind of seen with Rod Reiss in New Mutants, it could become something else. And I don't know. I feel like Starjammers.
Absolutely.
The problem is that Starjammers is the kind of property that most people don't know about or care about. So it would be really hard to get it off the ground. But I feel like Lemire is like the king at that.
Yeah, but I also feel like that's the opportunity to just completely reinvent or retell a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you grab something that nobody cares about and you thrust it into greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise people are too sentimental.
That's true. Yeah, and then it's like, oh, this isn't my Starjammers.
Well, and I would totally be that way with X-23.
Oh, that's right? True.
Like, she's my favorite character. I would be really upset if an X-23 book came out that I didn't feel was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, history's been a lot kinder to her more recently. But, you know, if I get to pick the creative team, I know it'll be good.
For sure. my other pick is Christopher Priest.
Okay.
And I just forgot the other their artist.
Todd McFarlane.
Oh, Chris Samnee.
Oh, okay.
Okay, ready? I'm going all X this week. In a new Bishop series. Okay. Hear me out. Samnee blew us away with Black Widow. So we know he can do like the espionage sort of thing, which Bishop would be. And I think Priest can bring that weirdness and otherworldness. I mean, if you've read his Deathstroke, very good at the espionage thing also, but also there's like a political element to it. And I don't know. I feel like Bishop is a character that it's hard to not hate him because he's got an awful past that you have to like forget about. But at the same time, like he's worthy of you know, building up his character and making him heroic and absolve him of his sins. I can't think of another way to say it. I think he's had a solo series before, though. So maybe I'm cheating.
I mean, Star Jam is also not a solo book, so you are
that's
cheating.
That's true. I am cheating.
But I am allowing it.
Should be unbelievable. So then I want to have a Star Jammers Bishop crossover event.
Okay.
And we're going to call it Box and Socks. Okay.
I hate to say that I think the most interesting story I can think of is Gabby getting kidnapped and Laura having to go bring her back to Krakoa or something like that.
Oh, for the first story Leah would do, you think?
Yeah.
I gotcha. I think these are all valid picks.
Let me write Superior Spidey. Actually, I don't trust myself to write Superior Spidey.
What would you do? Would you bring back his girlfriend? What's her name? Anne? What is it?
What's her? Eva Marie? Anna Marie?
Anna Marie, yes.
Yeah.
I like that dynamic.
Yeah.
That was going places too when Gage was, and when that story was sort of wrapping up too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just have to go to an alternate universe where these stories continue.
Let's talk about books that did come out.
In our top books of the week, we pick our top two favorite comics that came out this week. What is your second favorite book, and is it mine?
So, it is, so we can talk about them all at once. We both picked Cyberpunk 2077, Trauma Team Number 1, written by Cullen Bunn, with art by Miguel Valderrama. I read this because I saw it on your list.
Oh, cool.
So it was good. It was very good. I do want to address something really quickly before we get into the content of the comic.
Okay.
Which is to say that I recognize and I felt while reading Cyberpunk that CD Projekt Red, and more particularly CD Projekt Red's social media managers, are not people that I admire, nor do I want to be friendly with. I do worry about the transphobic content in this game.
Oh, really? I didn't know about this.
Yeah, in the video game. So there's been quite a bit of transphobia, transphobic jokes on their Twitter accounts. And also it seems to be some text in the game.
Mm-hmm.
In that they're going for some kind of edgy representative thing. That stuff is not in the tabletop role-playing game, and it's not in this comic. Which is why I felt comfortable reading it, or why I felt comfortable reading it and then talking about it.
Yeah.
I do want to recognize, however, that your experience may be overshadowed by that, and that's totally valid.
How long has this been going on?
Years.
So I actually reviewed this for the site, and I say in the review, I have not even, like, besides seeing the Keanu Reeves trailer, I have not, like, looked into this universe at all.
Oh, okay.
So maybe you can help me. Yeah, I thought it was, like, brand new.
Well, the video game is new, and there's never been a video game before.
Yeah.
But the first edition of the Cyberpunk role-playing game, a tabletop role-playing game like Shadowrun or Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Was published in 1988.
What?
1989?
I had no idea.
Yeah. So it's a very, very storied property.
Yeah.
And I think that Cullen Bunn did a fantastic job of telling a story that already exists in that world. I don't know if he got like a lore bible for the video game or if he's played the tabletop role-playing game or something like that, but they use the correct slang. They use the correct visuals and vernacular, and it just feels really grounded in a world that already exists, right?
Right.
And that's probably because the property is getting more and more defined, so the game can come out later next year.
Right.
But I will say, too, the art is fantastic. It tells a pretty great story about grief and trauma, but the art is this, like, very vibrant, neon bright. But like you were saying about Christian Ward, bringing that psychedelic energy to sci-fi.
Right.
And they did a really good job. Miguel did a really fantastic job of, it's a hectic, frantic action book, but it's all digestible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, like, it can be really hard to parse action scenes when an artist isn't on top of it.
Right.
And Miguel does a really great job. It reminded me of the tenseness of the Judge Dredd movie. The one with Carl Urban.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminded me a lot of that, actually. They're kind of like descending into this apartment building and fighting off people and moving from like room to room, you know?
Yeah, the detailing and the masks and the vehicles is just on so good.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels gritty and realized.
Most of the characters, you can't see their faces a lot of it, and you still get the emotion out of them,
mm-hmm.
which is another really tricky thing for an artist to do. I also was very intrigued by the concept of an EMT unit that's hired by rich people to protect them and save them.
Yeah. I do love also that there's like slight jokes about that. Like this character that's struggling with their trauma. Wow. It gets okayed after they say that they did a good thing for the company.
Right.
They get okayed to go back onto the ground into action.
In this, like, you know, capitalist society, I don't see this, you know, being that far off from where we might go someday.
Yeah.
Which is haunting, and why science fiction stories like this are so important, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the one slight problem I had with it was this issue in particular was that it is kind of decompressed. There's not a lot that happens, and it's only a 4-issue series.
Yeah, so I think it's very much just going to be like this one op that they're out on. And that's fine.
Right.
But I did feel that as well. Yeah.
Right. And like, you know, when you read as many comics as we do, you really cherish those stories that tell you like a million years in 20 pages of story versus the story that takes 5 minutes.
Yeah. I know you're speaking specifically about Venom the End, which I will say capture a million years in one issue.
If you read that and then give these two comics to someone who's never read comics, give them that and then give them Hellions, the last issue, and go, what do you think? They'll be like, wow, it's very different.
Yeah.
So that was both our second favorite book of the week. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cullen Bunn can't do much wrong, I don't think. X-Men Blue was good.
Yeah, I usually tend to say that Cullen Bunn's original properties interest me more.
Yeah.
Unearth, Harrow County, those kinds of things. But he did a really fantastic job with the license here, which makes me suspect that he might be a fan of the role-playing game.
Mm, right, it's like richer for it.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week comes with another reservation. My favorite book of the week is The Rise of Ultraman #1, written by Kyle Higgins and Matt Groom, with Francesco Manna on art. Ultraman, if people don't know, is a very, very popular, storied kaiju superhero property that exists over in Japan, kind of adjacent to Godzilla, kind of adjacent to other kaiju stories.
Power Rangers.
I have concerns. Yeah, Power Rangers. I have concerns about a mostly white Western team being assigned to write this and draw this. Obviously, that's an editorial decision at Marvel, but they definitely have people on Marvel that could write this story and probably want to, and probably have never gotten to work with the Ultraman property, especially given that all of the characters in this book are Asian. That being said, a really, really fascinating take at a #1. You expect that it's going to be about a giant Ultraman fighting giant monsters, and it totally subverts your expectations by not doing that, by telling a smaller, quieter, pretty expository story about a couple of rookie agents trying to just understand where they are and what their standing in this top secret organization is. Before a massive reveal at the end of the issue. So they're definitely building to the typical Ultraman thing.
Right.
But I totally appreciate the restraint.
Yeah, you can tell they put a lot of effort in world building and to get it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And how did you, read it then?
Yeah, I reviewed it for the site.
Oh, you did. How did you feel about the redactions?
That was kind of clever.
Yeah, okay.
I thought it was interesting. Yeah, so if you don't know, there's black caption boxes and white text, but some of the text is like whited out, so you can't read certain words. And it felt like we were part of the universe in that we were getting redacted information too, right?
Okay, yeah. I did think it was basically they're explaining like K-rays and the science patrol and other Ultraman stuff, but they're doing it in fiction, like you're saying. I did think it was an effective way to prevent new readers from getting overwhelmed.
Oh, that's true.
Like, you don't have to keep track of all this data or all this information, or even more narrowly, all of these proper nouns.
Right.
I hope that they slowly reveal that stuff more.
The two main characters are also kind of new and fresh. Right. They don't know all the secrets. Yeah. So it's like you're in their shoes more so. Also, God, the idea of like when a kaiju, or I guess it's a kaiju, when the monsters show up, things get weird, like reality bends.
Yeah.
That's so cool to me. I don't know if that's actually in Ultraman.
I have a feeling
it probably doesn't.
And my expectation is that it is because our friend Ritesh is very into Ultraman, and Ritesh likes a very specific kind of story.
It was also interesting, the backups. The Michael Cho drawn backup set in France was interesting mm-hmm. because it shows you this universe goes back in time as well as space. and then there's some fun, like, comic strippy comics as well that add a bit of humor, a touch of humor to the corporate side of the Ultraman universe, yeah. which is clever.
You know, they packed a lot of genres into this. They pack a lot of beats and a lot of storytelling into it. It's all digestible, though.
I
appreciate that kind of restraint. I am only tangentially familiar with Ultraman, so I'm not too precious about it. I have seen and ranked every Godzilla movie, so I'm familiar with the genre, and I have expectations maybe for where this might go, but I'm also willing to be surprised. That's kind of fun.
When I was little, I would watch Ultraman. Ultraman and Power Rangers were my jam, but for some reason, my local channel only played the same three Ultraman episodes, and I just got so sick of watching the same Ultraman episodes, I had to stop watching. And that is the tragic tale of David Brooke. Moving on, my favorite comic of the week was The Amazing Spider-Man number 48. This is part of the Sin's Rising story arc, where Sin Eater has come back to life, is killing villains, stealing their powers with his magical gun, and there's absolutely no explanation as to why or how this is all working, except that Kindred, our favorite Spider-Man villain, right, Forrest?
Sure.
Is somehow involved. But actually, this issue has almost nothing to do with Sin Eater. It has everything to do with Spider-Man asking his friends, like Ghost Spider and Miles Morales Spider-Man, advice on what he should do, because he's found out Sin Eater is going to kill Norman Osborn. And by kill him, he means take all the sin out of him so he's no longer evil. And this story arc has been up and down for me. It's been really good at times, really eh. And this issue comes together really well because it just focuses on the relationship Norman Osborn and Spider-Man, and this idea that all of Spider-Man's friends want Spider-Man to let Sin Eater kill Norman Osborn. Just get him out of the way, clean his soul so he's no longer a bad guy. And Spider-Man knows it's wrong to be doing this to people, for the Sin Eater and his cult. He has a cult of followers now. They're all rushing out and punishing people based on whatever they believe. Not necessarily, there's no court. There's no person deciding if someone deserves this. And even though Norman is awful and has been awful to Spider-Man multiple times through history, he still can't let this happen, let this go. And it's getting to the core of how Spider-Man, he fights for what's right no matter what. And that's really interesting to me, especially with Green Goblin in the crosshairs. And of course, this is all building up to Amazing Spider-Man number 850, which is also issue number 49 of the current run, which is coming out in a few weeks. So it's building towards, if you've been reading any of the solicit information, Green Goblin's coming back. But yeah. This issue is very self-contained in that it's about Spider-Man contemplating if he should let Green Goblin die or not. And that psychological element works really well. And it's also drawn by Mark Bagley, who is the first artist that got me into comic books.
Well, so, that helps.
Yeah, it does. I have a feeling when this is collected, people are going to be like, eh, because there really are some low moments in the series where I'm just like, this could have been better.
Yeah.
But
I hate to say, Spider-Man is right up there in my favorite characters. It's like X-23 Venom Spider-Man. And mm-hmm. I am just burnt out on the story Nick is telling.
Yeah.
It's taking too long.
God, Kindred.
It's taking too long. But I am interested in the minutiae. And sometimes he has these really amazing breakthroughs where he totally gets what Peter Parker is meant to represent. And it sounds like you're saying that this issue really capitalized on that, and I think that's great.
For better or worse, Spencer has been reliving classic Spider-Man tales in his arcs.
Yes.
And for better in that, hey, it's kind of cool if you're a longtime reader, oh, look, he's referring to this Sin Eater character that, people probably forgot about. But for worse, it's it doesn't feel original and new and fun. It's just drudgery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't, I'm just hoping when Kindred is finally revealed, we can move on. Maybe get a new writer, or just he can get over it. In our next segment, top books for next week, our number one book we're looking forward to out next week. What are you looking forward to, Forrest?
Real quick on this one, Giant Size X-Men Storm. This is written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Russell Dodderman. I know that people have concerns about the narrative that has been worked into these Giant Size X-Men issues, and that's totally valid, but these are meant to be kind of artist showcases. Dodderman is a great artist with surprising, kind of amazing consistency, especially around characters like Storm and some of the other X-Men. So I'm very much looking forward to the story that they tell here, which I think is also going to be the first sequel X-Men Giant Size X-Men book. All of them have been kind of standalone stories, but this is going to be piggybacking off of the Jean Grey Emma Frost one.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, because it deals with Storm's sickness.
Right. So it feels, I get the case for this being more important maybe than some of the other ones have been. Like the Magneto one was kind of a nothing story.
Yeah, it kind of was. And Nightcrawler, too.
And Hickman's got Dodderman on board to tell something that I think will actually add to the DOX, and probably Ten of Swords paradigm.
Dodderman's layout design is... He's pushing the needle, man.
That is
and
true.
That's one of the coolest things about this book. I got a chance to look at it early, and it is really good. Good pick.
Oh, great. Good to know. Thanks.
I like to just, you know, review your reviews, you know, every week. Oh, no, not a good pick for us. Sorry.
Ooh, actually, it was bad.
My pick for next week is Detective Comics number 1027, 144-page Mega Spectacular.
Wow.
If you're as confused as I am as to why a random 1027 issue would be extra-sized with a bazillion creators involved... You're not alone, because, I don't know, apparently this is a milestone issue for Batman. I forget why. Do you remember?
It's the 1,000th appearance of the character or something like that.
1,000th issue anniversary of The Dark Knight. Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's on the cover. I just read that. So, big reason why this is my pick. We got Grant Morrison. We got Kelly Sue DeConnick. Greg Rucka. James Tynion, Bendis, Peter Mark Tomasi. Wolfman. I mean, those are just the artists. I mean, writers.
Mariko Tamaki, Riley Rossmo. Wow.
Yeah. Eduardo Risso is one of my favorites, and he does a story with Rucka. I got to read that story early. It is a really clever story about birthdays, and I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
I mean, come on. The creators involved in this. This is the creator lineup that should have been on Detective Comics 1000, in my opinion.
Yes.
Not that Detective Comics 1000 was bad, but these are heavy hitters. Moving on. Judging by the cover, Junior. Our next segment, we'll talk about our favorite cover art next week. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Kurt Vonnegut, written or adapted by Ryan North and Albert Montes, Slaughterhouse-5, one of my favorite novels. The art is insane. It's very graphic designy, if that makes any sense. It looks like it could be the cover of a really good novel, and now we're getting it in a graphic novel adaptation format. It's got these bombs falling in the background, with this alien spaceship that I'm assuming it's an alien spaceship that is beaming light down onto the title, and I think tractor beaming up our main character into this bullseye. The helmet, the spaceship is a helmet, so there's like a connection to World War II. The bombs, of course, as well. Just a vividly stark cover that is beautiful at once and also telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this. I like Ryan North's writing quite a bit.
Yeah, and as a comedy / drama, I think he's going to nail it. Mm-hmm.
My pick is the X-Men Marvel Snapshot number 1. This one's written by Jay Edidin of Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. This is the Cyclops. I couldn't think of the character's name. The
One Eye.
Cyclops issue. It's got a great kind of subversion of the normal Cyclops imagery in that his eye beam is pointing downwards and all of the momentum is towards the bottom of the page as compared to, you know, it's usually pointing up into the top third or even directly at the reader, but they've kind of, Alex Ross has kind of flipped this in a really fantastic way. Also, it's Alex Ross, so mm-hmm. it just looks amazing. Yep. The lighting is fantastic off of the I-beam. The reflection on Cyclops's weird X pauldron, the stark purple background, and then also the title treatment right across the center of the book. And also the, you know, the camera lens, the aperture in the snapshots, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of little details here. The image that I found is super high quality for some reason. And you can zoom in on it and see all of the painterly small details that went into this. And I just very deeply respect this.
I can't believe Alex Ross. Like, how? Yeah. How do you do it?
Yeah.
Do you think he's falling in this shot or is he jumping?
I mean, the more interesting thing narratively and artistically would be falling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't go wrong with Alex Ross.
True.
In our last segment, Off Topic, Top Shelf, I'm going to tell you something I'm interested in that's not comic book related. That literally happens in the show. There's a new show called Raised by Wolves, directed and co-created by Ridley Scott on HBO, HBO Max. It's a science fiction story about religion meets atheism, meets the end of the earth, and humans are trying to repopulate a planet God knows how many light years away, but it's definitely 13 years away by however fast our spaceships go in the future. The show is everything you'd want in a thought-provoking science fiction show. There are many different themes going on, including its main character being an android that's trying to take care of the last humans, atheists specifically. Meanwhile, there are basically a Christian. They look like they're dressed up like in the Crusades, Christian group, but they don't call it Christianity. They're a different religion that pray to Saul. They're also going to the same planet, and they want to repopulate. But a human had a smart idea that if you send two droids and a bunch of fetuses, you can send them much faster than a giant spacecraft with humans living on board. And so it's sort of a race to see who can populate first, but then things start getting in the way. There are life forms on the planet. And of course, these two sides, the atheists and the religious folks, hate each other. So I don't know. There's a lot to think about when you're watching it. And, you know, given the way society is today, it's not too far off from probably where we might go. Which, you know, like some of the best sci-fi, it's depressing in that way, too. And also, when a baby dies, the main android cries like a wolf. I don't know why.
Oh.
Why is that? Okay. Why is that in her programming? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. Why Ridley Scott?
Yeah, he's 83, 82
now. Wow. That's amazing. Wow, you're right. Yeah, wow. I'm very much looking forward to this. I like the Alien movies. I even like Prometheus and Covenant, so whatever. I have bad taste. But
I like Prometheus too, yeah.
I like Scott's aesthetic leanings and interests and narrative focuses and stuff. And he has been telling the same Alien story for like 15 years. So it's nice to see him working on something else, I suppose.
The droids do bleed white goo.
Of course they do. Gotta get droid milk. I did want to say, to kind of cap off the show, that I just read news that Fast and Furious is going to space. So, yes. Michelle Rodriguez just confirmed in an interview that the next Fast and Furious movie will see them in space.
Is it 8 or 9 are we on?
9.
Good God. Wait a minute. I thought they were wrapping up the final trilogy or something.
Yeah, maybe they all go to space.
I hope they all die at the end.
I hope that they send them into space and they become the Fantastic Four.
Or maybe they encounter a giant zombie Galactus and they all become zombies and come back, and then all of humanity is eaten and killed by the Fast and the Furious. Ooh, what would be the title for a zombie Fast and the Furious?
The Running Dead.
The Running Dead. That's not bad. Gear it up. Let's do it. Let's get Michael Bay on this
one. We got to hop on this podcast so we can workshop this.
I'm going to get Michael on the phone. Well, that's the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked it, please review, subscribe, and tell your friends.
And wear your mask.
And wear your goddamn mask.
Bye.